Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Ener Jr. and Jim Osarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome to the latest edition of the BBP. This is Paul Ener Jr. I am here with Jim Osarski, your Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals beat writers. We're back. We're a little tired.
Yeah.
But we are powering through after we returned from Newark.
Yep.
Jersey City. East Rutherford.
Yeah.
Regular Rutherford.
Regular. Right.
We did the whole tour. You were in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Hit it all up after we come back from New York, where the Bengals beat the New York Jets in the season opener 23-22. Good trip, though. Like, I had a good time on this trip. I had a good New York's just a, you know, it's a fun place. There's a lot you could do there. It's just a good time.
Yeah, yeah. No, I had never been. So it was a win all the way around. I mean, it was an emotional weekend, you know. It wasn't all happy all the time. But I mean, it was in general, though. Like, I wouldn't have traded it for the world. I don't think, you know, if I had to work this weekend, I don't think there was any better place to have been.
Yeah.
You know, than to be in Manhattan, be in, at a New York football team in Jersey.
Yeah.
On the 15th anniversary, September 11th. It was a
no shortage of flags.
Yeah. A lot of flags.
Big flags, little flags, medium flags. Really, any kind of flag you can ever imagine.
Yeah.
If someone had one in their hand and was waving it.
Yes.
How happy is the flag community? Like, every single NFL team unveils an entire football field-sized flag. The flag community is just thrilled about this dedication.
That's a good community.
It's a good community to be in, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, is it like Betsy Ross's great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter? Is that where you think it is? Is they still have the one cabin where they make all these flags?
I hope so.
I hope
it's a cabin.
It's one woman who's just trying to keep the family tradition alive.
Carpal tunnel. That's not good.
No. But no, yeah. You're right. It was a cool... certainly a cool weekend there. Lots of pageantry. Bengals, you know, really embraced the moment.
Yes.
More than I anticipated at all. They went directly to the 9/11 memorial.
Yeah.
And right after they landed, went there, checked everything out, and, you know, looked like it really affected a lot of guys. They were wearing the FDNY hats, and you know, all their captains were wearing those. I mean, Marvin really seemed to use it as a teaching moment for the players. I just think that was cool. I thought it made for – they really sort of took in the spirit of the weekend and what it meant to be a part of that game.
Yeah, and I think if you want to apply it to a football level, a personality level, new year, new team, Paul.
Oh,
you know,
boy.
So it's you know, maybe that'll be a hashtag.
I think it
New
will.
Year team. That's a teaser for you. I guess the idea of Marvin embracing the big stage, the big moment, because to me, opening the season in New York on that date was a big stage. And it's not a bad team.
No. You know,
this is a fourth-ranked defense in the league. You know, an offense that had Pro Bowlers.
Won 10 games.
I mean, we talked about it last week on these podcasts that, you know, down the line, this could have AFC wild card playoff implications. You know, I don't know. I thought it was interesting. You're right that they welcomed it, embraced it, and then in the end proved us both wrong and won a tilt. They won a game.
They won a tilt.
Yep.
You know, so a little bit of what we're going to get into. We're going to get into a lot about this game and what it means now for this team. You learn so much in week one.
Yeah.
I mean, you really do. It's one of the most revealing weeks of the year because everyone is so close to the vest throughout the entire offseason about
right.
their direction. They don't want anybody to know. Everything's trying to stay hidden. Preseason, don't show anything. And then it all sort of comes out at
right.
once. And a lot came out of this game. It was we're going to get into the offense, or should we just call it the passing game?
Right.
Which is what the offense was, essentially, on Saturday. You knew A.J. Green was good. We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about the offensive line issues. We'll talk about the defense and some of the things that look the same as last year, like the red zone, and some of the things that look different than last year, like the run defense, which struggled, but still they end up coming up with the win. So we'll get into all of that and more. You guys had a lot of questions, so we'll try to run through some of the questions you guys have been firing at us for a few days. But so let's start here, though, with just winning this game. I mean, it was clearly the feel of two very good teams going at
yeah.
each other. And we'll talk a lot about some negatives that came of this. But to go to that place on that stage without two of your most dynamic game changers in Vontaze Burfict on defense and Tyler Eifert on offense and find a way to beat a very good team who was absolutely destroying your quarterback.
Yes.
It shows the resolve. It shows a team that knows how to win. I mean, the Bengals clearly know how to win in the regular season.
Yes.
They looked like that. I mean, they've just found a way to do it. And it was close, and a lot of times you'd probably say maybe they didn't deserve to win, but they made the plays when they absolutely had to, and it proved to be enough.
Yeah, I was telling Paul immediately post game, and then even on Sunday or Monday that I was surprised, I guess is the word. It, definitely impressed. I didn't think really at any moment in that game that the Bengals were going to win.
They weren't playing
it was
like
close.
It.
Yeah, it was close, and I guess you know you and I could say, hey, we kind of thought it would be a defensive struggle and it would be a one possession game in either way. But I didn't think it would happen. And maybe Brandon Marshall helps that by dropping that ball in the fourth quarter. You know, it's maybe a way different conversation if he brings that in. But he didn't. So, you know, kickers miss field goals and PATs all in week one too. So you're right, Paul. I give him a lot of credit, to do that. And, you know, the quarterback, you know, again, we didn't talk a lot about him, but that was a very impressive performance, in my opinion.
You know, a lot of the ink would be spilled across the country about A.J. Green terrorizing Darrell Revis. Darrell Revis, this could go down as his worst day as a pro. He was absolutely, unequivocally destructed by A.J. Green. When Revis was lined up on Green, A.J. caught 10 of 10 targets for 152 yards and a touchdown. The touchdown over the top, a little tough on Revis, didn't have the safety help. They called it a blown coverage, whatever. Still a touchdown over the top for 7 points. And then with the Bengals out of field goal range on 3rd and 13 and one-on-one, Revis versus Green on the outside, press coverage, A.J. took him to school, got 11 yards, and put the Bengals in range for a 47-yard field goal that Mike Nugent kicked through. You can't get more one-on-one great-on-great than that. And over and over and over and over again, A.J. did it. And so we can spend a lot – we have spent a lot of time discussing and writing that. And it's necessary to talk about it. But the Dalton side of it is – maybe as impressive, if not more, when you throw in the fact that he was just getting killed back there.
Yeah.
He had no time to do anything. He's trying to decipher a very intricate defensive scheme for the Jets and was able to constantly put the team into the right positions and work the outside passing game as much as he needed to. It was masterful. He had one bad throw that was picked early in the game, but after that, I mean, 78% of his passes, 366 yards, and two drives with the time running down
right.
to score points, to kick two field goals that ended up being the difference.
Yeah, it was, you know, they put it on him. You know, say, hey, you're going to throw it.
Yep.
And you have to throw it fast and make good decisions. And, you know, and that's on that last drive, you know, AJ Green had to go out for a couple plays. So there was a run to Jeremy Hill, got positive yards. James Wright, 7 yards
yep.
for a first down. You know, CJ Uzama early, that was the play that really loosened things up for the Bengals after a really kind of spotty start, you know, with a punt and the interception, several negative plays, penalties, and then a catch and run, 54 yards. So, I mean, it was, you know, I don't want to call it a vintage performance because I haven't been here long enough to use that word.
There haven't been many like it, so I don't think it is vintage.
But I guess for me, like in the last two, you know what? Andy said, you know, I wanted to be better than picking up from 2015. Well, I've only been here for, you know, one regular season and one game, and this is all I've seen him do.
Yeah.
So it's been pretty, I mean, it's exactly what I guess everyone hoped for, what they expected in this building. And I guess, it, you know, he did it.
He looked just like yeah. last year, and it's only going to get easier for him.
Right.
I mean, this was the first game with right. all these new things.
Right.
And then you throw in the fact that he doesn't have any time to pass
because
right. he was constantly under pressure from the Jets. You know, he's eventually going to get Eifert back. He's going to develop more comfort with Ken Zampezi as right. his play caller. He's going to develop more comfort with Brandon LaFell, although it looked pretty comfortable yeah. on Sunday.
Yeah, how about that, right?
I mean, I don't know where.
Didn't look up at all in the preseason.
You know, we keep talking about how who the hell knows about Brandon LaFell. And Marvin Lewis told us after the game, he said, I think the Jets were sleeping a little bit on Brandon LaFell.
Yeah.
And there's some truth to that. Yeah. He had the huge cross on third down and the huge deep ball.
Yeah.
That was one of Andy's best balls he's ever thrown, yeah. the 54-yard bomb on third and 17.
Yeah.
That sets up the score. Two chunk plays on that. So the Bengals do so many things wrong in this game. I mean, between the 7 sacks, which is the most that Dalton's ever been sacked.
Yeah.
They've only been sacked more times once since 1996. They really couldn't run the ball. There were two good runs all game, really. The one Jeremy Hill ran in for a touchdown, which was super impressive.
Yeah.
And the 11-yard rugby scrum by yeah. Giovanni Bernard. But they didn't run it much. It was
right.
very, very pass
heavy. Yeah, 19 total carries.
Yeah, very pass heavy. Most of those carries came towards the end.
Yeah.
24-6 in the first half. But yet they still scored 23 points against a very good
yeah.
Jets defense that was terrorizing them. This team hung their hat on Dalton and Green is enough, and we can continue to fill around the pieces outside of them. We don't have to go overpay for all these other small pieces. Let's just keep this core and everything else can build around it. And for 1 week, 1/16th of the answer, it was.
Yeah.
Now, granted, AJ Green's math was amazing, but, I mean, it was. And that should be a pretty encouraging sign for where this offense is at.
Yeah, and just kind of some more – under the radar type things. Tyler Boyd, big catch to set up the field goal at the crazy ref falling down and
ridiculous
Clark Harris's way but Tyler Boyd's got to make a catch laid out and actually Paul, I think it was a pass interference that he drew. You know, that was the thing, right? To get Tyler Boyd get separation. We got separation enough to get held and draw a big PI. Which in coaching, I mean that's a completion. In their eyes,
mm-hmm.
You know that you mentioned the LaFell thing, and Uzama was interesting. He that catch and run, and Andy went to him two straight times after that, and CJ actually admitted in the locker room on Monday that he was a little too pumped up after the catch, and he said he just ran his routes way too fast,
yeah,
and was just not where he needed to be. And but again, to your point about how it will get easier for this offense down the line, you would hope he learned from that. And you know, in week two, week three, if Tyler Eifert remains out, or even if he's come back, you know, here's this athletic guy who maybe, you know, is going to figure out a little something to contribute.
Yeah, you know, they easing Tyler Croft back in. He only played, I think, 7 snaps. So that, you know, he was just basically just in there as a fail safe in case something happened. They didn't want to push him too hard, so they took it easy. But yes, you know, all those pieces, and Andy was able to keep the train driving straight, and I think that says it says quite a bit. Let's dive into this topic. So. You got a story up Tuesday, Tuesday's paper about Ken Zampezi, his first day calling plays, and people were wondering, is this guy ever going to run the football? we saw almost none of Ryan Hewitt.
Yeah.
We saw very, very little of Jeremy Hill running the ball. We saw a whole lot of throwing it. Whether it was quick hits, whether it was trying to hit chunk plays, which those of you that kept up with our preview section know that that's a huge thing for Ken Zampezi. He wants big, and he had it. They had 7 plays that ended up covering at least 20 yards. 4 of those 30 plus, 2 of those 50 plus.
Yeah,
3 of those 49 plus.
Right.
I mean, that's what he wants to be. He wants to be. It can hit you in a hurry. But I was still taken aback. Granted, the Jets have a defense that you don't want to run right at Muhammad Wilkerson and Leonard Williams and all those guys. I get that. But Jeremy Hill and Ryan Hewitt and this offensive line have had a lot of really nice days running the football. And, I mean, 24-6 in the first half is just not a ratio you expect.
No, I think you and I on this podcast a week ago said, hey, you know, they're going to go heavy.
Run it.
Smash mouth, run it. You know? Yep.
No.
I think Ken read it and read that and was just like, no.
I'll show them. They picked against us. They say we're going to go smash mouth. We're going to win, and we're going to throw it all over
clowns,
the place.
Clowns. Yeah, in that piece, he essentially calls, run-pass ratio, those numbers. He used the word irrelevant.
Yeah.
And basically he's like, you do whatever it takes to win. And there's 2 numbers in his mind in real time that matter. And he said that was total points and turnovers. And he's like, he basically explains in the story that you know, rushing attempts and passing attempts are something that are cumulative. He's like, essentially, come back to me in 10 weeks and see where it's at. You know, in his mind, he just really didn't, you know, it was about beating the Jets on Sunday, and he clearly felt putting on the quarterback was the way to go.
Well, and you can see that because their strength is clearly their defensive line up their middle, and their corners and their guys on the edges clearly struggle making tackles and avoiding blocks. I mean, how many times did you see a quick hit or a receiver screen, whether it was I think CJ Uzama had a good block one time. There were a couple of guys that got out there and just had big blocks to break guys wide open. I mean, you know, they came out of their own end on that touchdown drive, the one that also had the LaFell, with just a quick wide receiver screen to AJ Green that he took for over 30 yards.
Yeah, it was like the
could have gone further.
Yeah, the one we kind of joked of, the formation we joked about last year, 2-yard gain,
2-yard gain
with Andrew Whitworth. It was Witt and Ryan Hewitt in front of AJ Green. Now, you know, it's technically a pass. But, you know, in certain offenses, a lot of coordinators and coaches feel those are essentially run plays. You've got all-pro left tackle, and you're halfback. You signed to a multi-million dollar extension leading the way.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was interesting that it was so lopsided, especially because Jeremy Hill, I thought, really looked good. You know, very decisive. That 12-yard run, there was a hole to start, and he made one at the end.
Yeah.
So it was interesting that especially in such a close game, you know, that it wasn't, you know, you weren't chasing.
Yeah. You know what? One thing about Jeremy Hill that I noticed, much more useful of those jump cuts and getting forward rather than trying to shake and run to the edges. He was just running, jump cut forward, jump cut over forward. Whereas we saw so much last year of like a shake and bake and then trying to outrun a guy or pull a spin move or something like that. I think I think you're seeing a little bit of what he's talked about. And what the team has talked about trying to get him to do this offseason. I agree with what Zampezi was saying about this in that I do think that you will see weeks where it will be Ryan Hewitt. But they went to where the weakest spot on that Jets defense was, and it's such a huge difference between the strength of their line and their their exterior. And when you continue to have success with the same plays – you might as well do it. I mean, when they got 15 yards out of the 2 yard gain formation, you knew it could be a long day on the edges for the Jets. Yeah. And they had to do that because especially when they kept trying to drop back and getting sacked and getting behind the chains, they had to just stay in front of the chains because you get to second or third and long against the Jets, it's just you know, let them eat.
Right. And go figure. The weak link was Revis Island. You know what I mean? It was just not granted. You had that guy who could do that. But you're right, Paul. I'd be curious to see. I don't think too many teams you're going to see replicate what the Bengals did against the Jets. They may try, but I think the combination of the quarterback and the receiver, and then even those key other elements in the passing game. I don't think there's a whole lot of teams that can wheel that out and just say, "Oh yeah, well this is what we're going to do."
Yeah,
I think we're going to see the Jets, if they're healthy, especially Sheldon Richardson comes back. We're going to look back, and Marvin Lewis said, kind of look back at the end of the year, it's like, wow, this is one of those close games that means a lot.
I mean, I specifically remember looking back to the, whether it was the Ravens opener in 2014 where they win on the deep ball to AJ out of nowhere. And that ends up going a huge part to deciding, whether they made the playoffs or not, whether you're games like this in AFC against teams that are probably in the playoff hunt, that is a game that matters. To winning a close game, a road game. I mean, there's just so many things. To me, and I sort of wrote it, that was worth 1.3289 wins.
Yeah.
Like not quite 1.5 wins like a win at Pittsburgh would be,
right?
But more than one.
Yeah.
I mean, because of the tiebreaker and the high-end opponent implications, I think pulling that out is definitely one they're going to look back on, and they're doing it because of Dalton and Green. So I want to bring in the AJ Green after the game. Usually the only people that come to the podium after the game is Marvin Lewis will come in, and then the locker room will stay open for a little while, and then the last person to basically speak will be Andy, and he'll go into the podium room it's like a separate, depending where they all have their own separate little press conference rooms. Well, there was no doubt A.J. Green was going into the podium. So it was a podium game.
Right.
Podium game for A.J. Green. And he earned it at the podium. He's – A.J. doesn't really enjoy the drivel during the week. And to be fair, neither do I.
Yeah.
but he is really good talking after games, talking about games and things like that. And it's – let's say this. For a franchise that has not only – seen the rise of the diva receiver at one point, but pretty much put it out there on a platter in 2010. You can't ask for anybody to be more gracious and every type of class that you would want after a day where he just dismantled Darrelle Revis, just praising him and talking about wanting to be a leader and leading this team. I just thought it was AJ at his best. After the game. So here's A.J. Green, about 5 minutes of him at the podium, on his podium game on Sunday against the Jets.
Yeah, I guess you kind of set the tone earlier with the deep ball against Darrelle. Did you feel like that kind of got your momentum going on today?
Oh, man, like I said, we had a rough start. But that's opening day for you, man. We had a lot of rough starts doing it, and I was just trying to make play. Like I said, that kick – kickstarted a little bit, so I was just happy to get in the zone.
It's always big to have a great day in the NFL, but when you do it against Revis, does that make it a little
special? The whole week everybody was saying AJ versus Darrelle, man. Revis is a first ballot Hall of Famer. It's just my honor going against him, and I was just trying to make plays anytime the ball came my way, Herb and Zamp was just preaching me, you know, it starts from us. It starts from Andy and I, and that's what we got to do. We got to start fast like that. We got to put our team in the best situation to win, and that's what we did today.
You said at training camp, AJ, that you wanted to be the best receiver in the NFL this year. Is this a good first step towards kind of taking that?
It's a long season to go, man. That's one thing about this season, is grind, man. It's up and down. You know, I'm just taking one game at a time, and I just hope we continue to win. That's the biggest goal, is to win. And we came out with the W. That's all that matters.
But is that what those kind of players do, that they take over games like this, first game of the season on the road against a good team? You kind of did that today.
Yeah, it wasn't just me. It was just, you know, Andy. Andy gave me opportunities. And you got to, you know, he checks to a lot of those plays and put me in great situation when he sees a matchup that he likes. And that's what I got to do. I got to win those one-on-one matchups when it presents itself. And that's what I try to do today.
With so many new pieces, with CJ's out there and Tyler and Brandon LaFell, how much did you kind of put a little bit extra on you to be the one to say, let's just kind of take this thing over a little bit?
You know, from day one, it starts from me and Andy, and you know, but we got Joe. Joe been around this league for a long time and played big, and you saw that today. And with CJ, make that big play for us, another kickstarter that got us down there, and then TB had a big catch that got us in a field goal range, and it all starts with Andy. Andy and the way Andy conducts this offense, the way he does, and that's the big part. Why we're so successful, it starts from him. And you know, he gets us in some great plays.
On the third down at the end there, was there any doubt in your mind that it was coming to you?
Oh yeah, I know it was coming to me. It had to. But like I said, I was just trying to make a play. I should have got that first down. I definitely should have got that first down. But you know, Nuge put it right through for us, and we came out with a win. It was a complete team a win. Defense did their part, offense did their part.
People like to attach statements to big wins like this. What do you think this set up this football
game? Just 1-0. That's it.
How's the experience out there today, playing in New York City on such a special day? Like
I said, opening day is emotional already, but it's even emotional when you play here in New York and all the stuff that happened in 9/11. It's, you know, so many emotions going through your body, just not football. It's just, you know, we're just blessed to be here. And, you know, a lot of people lost their life 6 years, whatever, years ago in that tragedy. So it makes you, you know, think about life, and, you know, anything can happen. And you were just blessed to play the game of football.
Take us through the last drive, particularly the mindset, because you got the ball back trailing a few minutes ago.
Oh, man, you know, just make a play. try to get in field goal range. We practice the situation every day in practice. It was nothing special. We just got a call, got a face mask call on me that gave us an extra 15 yards. And Jeremy had some great runs, and then it happened. So.
You mentioned Andy before, how kind of day he had. He was under pressure all day, right, to still be able to engineer the kind of drives he did.
Right. This shows how poised he is, man. That guy is always smiling. You can see how much he has grown from, you know, when we first got here until now. He's so confident. He's having fun. He know what we have to do. He know what kind of offense we need to put in to go score. Like I said, our guy is one of the best, and I'm telling you that because I've been with him for 6 years, and I see his level of play rise so high, and today was another proof.
I'm sure you were asked this earlier, but can you take us back to that first touchdown catch? And do you think, was Revis looking for maybe help coming over?
Can't tell you what the defense can do. I just go out there and try to run my route. And he just gave me a shot. So
the one ball you had down the sideline looked like you almost caught it, just almost caught the one left hand. Mm-hmm. Maybe through that play, did you think that you'd be able to get to that one?
Like I said, man, when you're out there, everything happens so fast. So I was just trying. If I can get one hand on, I can bring it in. So I got one hand in, and luckily I brought it in. So
you mentioned how much respect you have for Revis, but when you played him last time, you know, your touchdown was when he was out of the game. Does it mean anything to you to actually score a touchdown on him now?
Like I said, man, that guy has nothing else to prove. He's the first ballot Hall of Fame for Hall of Famer for sure. You know, I'm trying to get where he is, and that's what I'm trying to do. So.
All right, let's move on to the defensive side of the football, where the first half, they looked out of sorts. You know, we saw this team be so good in the preseason, coming off a year where they were so good, and spent the whole offseason just building that whole thing back up into, you know, really this the backbone of their team, and the Jets were just picking them apart. Yeah. They were running it. They were throwing it. They were doing whatever they wanted to, and they racked up 16 points in the first half and should have been more because they had a chip shot field goal blocked by Marcus Hunt, which was really on Nick Folk, which was just way too low. but that was a surprising element, and they did settle down. It, to me, and tell me what you think, I mean, to me, I thought this was a team, this was a defense that just was caught by a very versatile Jets offense that they really didn't know what was going to happen, and we're still trying to figure it out the first half. And once they figured it out, they did settle down, and they looked like you expected them to.
Yeah, I think, you know, if there was one area where we were kind of forecasting accurately, if you will, we were very curious about how Vinny Ray, Carlos Dansby were going to do defensively against those Jets running backs, both in the run game, pass coverage. And I think that we did see that. I mean, Carlos Dansby even admitted it after the game. There just was, I mean, he was kind of seeing the wrong things or saw something and read it the wrong way. And you're right. I do think that they were off kilter. It's one of those things where you have so much time to prepare, and you can watch so much film for week one. You have a whole off season.
Yep.
But then it goes back to what you said at the very start of this BBP, where the preseason is so vanilla. So you can't really, you know, the Jets had a new guy, Matt Forte. Oh, by the way, some running back who's got like 500 career catches, right? I mean, like, and they had no idea how he'd be used. Maybe some idea, but not really. What does he have left in the tank? All these questions we talked about last week. And yeah, you're right, Paul. I think it took a little while. Second half was much better, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, only two field goals. And the red zone saved them.
Yeah.
Was there, I mean, basically two goal line stands. I mean, yeah. in the one where they were on the one, I mean, inside the one almost, and are able to get the stop, just huge plays that ended up making the difference in the game, along with a missed PAT.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that falls your way. You know, the there was the one long drive that the Jets had in the second half where they just ran it over and over and over again. And I mean, at the end of the day, 30 carries for 152 yards for the Jets is not something that this team is used to seeing. I mean, in the last, I believe, 22 games, last 22 games, only once have they given up that much.
Yeah.
Against Seattle last year, Thomas Rawls went off. And so I wouldn't be as concerned about that.
Right.
We'll see what happens with D'Angelo Williams next week.
Yeah.
So when we were sitting down with Paul Gunther, I knew it was going to happen, but I just asked him. I was like, I know obviously it's going to be different with Vontaze Burfict, but how different do you think it would have been with Vontaze Burfict in there? And he just smiled and didn't really answer.
No.
And I do think we saw that was 152 was. Because 55 wasn't there.
Yeah.
That was a game perfectly set up for him. A guy who can chase and tackle and also cover. So when you're in the nickel, you're not exposed in the run.
Right.
And Carlos Dansby in his first game had some moments that he admitted was exposed in the run a little bit, and they were able to sort of gash him down the field because of some wrong fits with some new guys and running out of nickel package.
Right.
And that was a trouble spot. But that wouldn't be the case with 55 out there because he, you know, that's why he makes him so good.
Right. Yeah, it's it definitely was interesting to watch them struggle in that regard. But again, it was sort of a repeat of early last year where, you know, teams march up and down the field between the 20s, between the teens. And then, oh, here comes the kicker.
Yep.
And you know what? Remember Paul Gunther, what it was every week. Hey, what about the, you know, Chargers running up and down, the Chiefs running up and down the field? He's like, yeah, how many field goals they kick? I mean, and that's the first thing Carlos Dunlap said to me in the post game. How many points?
Yeah.
You know, and it's unbelievable they did it again. And because it's so weird, Paul, because it's like the first thing Vinny Ray said after the game was, once they get in, especially those goal line situations, we don't want them to run the ball in. That's the first goal. which was so interesting because that's how the Jets kind of moved the ball in,
yeah,
was by running it. So then all of a sudden that was taken away, and it was like, we're going to make them throw it. And yeah, you know, Eric Decker caught a touchdown, and, you know, there was another kind of rub slash pick, however you want to look at it,
right,
another passing touchdown. But that's what they want. They want the opposing quarterback to test the corners,
yeah,
and the safety. So it was just really interesting, again, you know, that all of those run game struggles, but once they got inside the 15, the Jets couldn't move the ball then.
Yeah. You talked to Carlos Dansby after the game, and, you know, he played every single snap. And that was not in the plan,
no.
I don't think. I mean, Paul Gunther said after the game that can't happen. I mean, Dansby's 34.
Yeah.
You can't send him out there playing every single snap. And I think it's a little different rules for these first 3 weeks. But still, and Ray Malugo only played 8.
Yeah.
I mean, somewhere there's got to be a happy balance where, yeah, you can find a few more snaps, even against a team that's trying to spread you out and run at you. I mean, so, but anyway, you talked to Dansby, and I thought, you know, he was interesting in talking about the run thing and some other elements of this game. So here's a little bit of Carlos Dansby after the game.
It looked like they gave you guys a little bit of trouble with that little wind back play where Forte will start one way and then come back.
That's all on me. That's all on me. Nobody else. That's all on me. And I know where I made my mistakes at, but I got to be better next week.
That's part of the game. Just from a key standpoint?
Key standpoint. The whole situation changed. The whole, you know, I can't really give up all our tips and stuff, but, you know, my situation changed. So I got to be able to recognize it quicker and go make the play. That's on me.
He's easy to lose on that play, though, too.
No, not at all. I got to take full responsibility for that. Nobody else. Everybody else did their part but me. So that's how they got yours on that.
So that's where Dansby's a guy that we haven't talked a whole lot about since he signed, really. I mean, we have, but we haven't. And, I mean, he was really playing a huge role.
Yeah. And it's funny, you mentioned Ray Maluga going into that, and that's kind of where I wanted to circle back to, because Paul, I mean, you asked Paul Gunther about it, and Paul flat out said, that's my fault.
Yep.
And now it's funny, because we see things in camp and in practice before week one that we may find interesting, but it's not necessarily noteworthy, like, you know, in terms of you BBP listeners either bringing you audio or even writing a story. And thinking about it now, remember, we saw Ray Maluga a lot in nickel. In practice.
Yeah.
And he was running around and doing, and it's just one of those things where we've seen week one and you're like, I wonder if there was the thought, like, can Ray do this? And that brings up two things, Paul, that I want to ask you about, was especially going into Pittsburgh. So one, Ray Maluga, that type of player, there was a part of me, I'm like, wow, Paul, was he almost rendered irrelevant? Like, could teams totally take this guy off the field completely? Or if not, if Paul says no, he can be, was that maybe another reason why the Jets were so successful? Because he wasn't willing to risk Ray in coverage? Or I don't know. I really think that was either, well, yeah, he can't do it, or he can, and maybe it would have been a difference maker.
Well, I think the Jets are willing to say, if you want to put your best run stopper in there, we're going to throw it to Forte.
Yeah.
We're going to put Forte out and make him cover him.
Yeah.
If you're not going to put him in there, we're going to run at you.
Yeah.
And that's that. That was a big part of their philosophy. And I don't blame Paul Gunther for not putting him in there. I mean, you just... Yeah. You can't let Forte get out in space and run free because Maluga maybe would struggle to cover him. He would struggle to cover him.
Yeah.
There's a reason why, you know, he's a running game specialist. So for that fact, that is a strategy that I'm sure we will see again.
Yeah.
Particularly these next 2 weeks. Although, you know, there's enough tape on the Steelers and the Bengals that they've tried everything.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, I just thought Dansby's role was interesting. And, you know, he could have been, he held up okay. But, you know, I wonder what his role will be, how it will evolve going forward now.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be, yeah, especially once 55 is back. And, you know, Carlos Dansby's responsibilities change, you know, especially in some of those instances. Yeah, because you're right. I mean, Paul even said he's at his age. We can't have him.
Yeah,
we can't have him do that.
Yeah. Let me. We've been talking a lot about things that Paul Gunther said. So let's bring you a little bit of that. I want to take you into a little bit of our conversation with him on Monday, rehashing some of the things that went right and wrong for his group against the Jets. So here's a little bit of a look at where the defense stands at with defensive coordinator Paul Gunther.
It looks like Dansby played every defensive snap.
Yeah, played a lot.
Obviously, y'all are a little shorthanded for the next 2 weeks, but is that something you want for him going forward?
No.
And how do you handle it?
No, we'll get some guys in there different. Like I said, it was a different week. It may be the most. This could be in week 14, but this the offense, the way he constructs it with the people they have, is very different than we typically see. So going into week one, having that on your plate, and also having the unknown of the first game on your plate, it's a lot. So yeah, down the road we'll split them snaps up some.
Did you want to get visual to play the snap? Is that an opening day
thing? Yeah, you know, Nick's a rookie player, and he'll develop.
How did you think Dansby did? I mean, he kind of took responsibility for those 40 yards on the counter. And
yeah, I mean, he did some really good things. I mean, there's some things we got to clean up, and that's just not only him; it's a lot of guys. I mean, there were some things that was uncharacteristic for us that happened during the game that we don't typically see. You know, again, I'm kind of hoping it's first game jitters that there were some things in the run game we got out of our fit a little bit, and we just got to clean those things up moving forward.
It's easy to say, well, Vontez was there, maybe it would look a little different, but when they run for 150 and you see so many, I mean, how much would it be if Vontez was there? A lot of those would have been a little bit different. Those numbers might not have been the same.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But Fitzy said that he thought, you know, you guys played soft, you were kind of playing everybody back. Some of the safeties were back. Is that what you just wanted to, you just wanted to kind of control the big play?
No. I mean, we mixed it up some. I mean, that's part of kind of what we do, you know. I always said more games are lost than are won. So,
make Fitzy beat you.
Well, it's not that. It's just, you know, take, you know, try. What's the best thing the team does, and try to eliminate those things.
So when you go back and look at the run defense, is that what jumped out at you? The fits just weren't right.
Yeah, I mean, we just gave up some runs we don't typically give up. I mean, just you know, if a guy's out of a gap here, and you know, and we're in an 8-man front, it looks glaring. You know, and just we just did something that, again. First game, we got a lot of new guys playing. We had Dansby out there, we had Josh Shaw out there, Sean Williams making his first start, Marcus Hunt in there, Chris Lewis Harris in there. A lot of times, that's five brand new guys that really are starting for the first time. So, you know, some of those things are going to come, and you know, as we go through the practice week, we get some of the things correct that we'll tighten up as we go.
You mentioned Marcus. I mean, in the preseason, he obviously did flash. He wasn't. He probably said his name more yesterday than all the preseason. What did you see that made you believe you wanted to put him out there and you wanted him to be a big part of what you guys were doing on opening day?
Well, I mean, Marcus has been here. He's been here, and we're trying to develop. We've tried to develop him for a reason. It's just his time to start playing. So, you know, he got in there, did a good job, and hopefully he can continue ascending.
So it's got to be an encouraging thing for him to have so many, you know, affect the game in so many ways.
Yeah, it's great. I mean,
it's pretty ideal for
them. I always say at some point the light comes on for the player. I can tell you, just going back and thinking through some of our guys, I can think Adam Jones when the light came on for him. Vinny Ray, we were playing up in Baltimore, the light came on for him. Vontez was very early on. Carlos Dunlap, when the light, you know, all those things, you know, and hopefully the light will start to come on for him and he can understand he could be a really good player.
All right, so moving on a little bit. So now, guess who? I mean, it's Pittsburgh time, and you know, it's just going to be an interesting week around here.
Yeah,
we as reporters are going to have to ask questions, and them as players and coaches are not going to answer them.
Right.
For approximately 6 days.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the way it is. It's been discussed ad nauseum. There's nothing left to say.
Yeah.
They haven't wanted to talk about Pittsburgh since April 7th or whenever it was that they showed reported for the first day of the offseason program. They buried it. So I don't know what we're supposed to write. Like,
yeah, we didn't even get a chance.
What are you supposed to say about this that hasn't already been said and freaked out upon by the fan base? And I mean, it's just, it's so personal. It's the wound is still too open, as far as I'm concerned. These players and everybody can say that they're past it, and all these new, you know, whatever.
Well, they're not, because here's the thing: we didn't even get a chance to finish. So Mondays, and y'all BBP loyal BBP listeners know, is like the wrap up day. You know, that it's the day where they get healthy, they treatment, and they break down film. We didn't even get a chance to talk to Adam Jones about holding Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker to 5 catches. He walks in, I'm not talking about Pittsburgh, and just walks out.
Yep.
And you and I are looking at each other like, well, what the?
There was other things, though.
You played yesterday.
Yes.
So, you know, and the guys will talk about it, you know, because it is a game week, is an, you know, all that stuff. But you're right, in terms of last year, Paul, I don't know. All we can do is try to advance it to the game on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think we've covered it, and I think to their credit, most of them, I won't say all the players, but most of them have addressed that game in whatever role they played, from A.J. McCarron to Andy Dalton breaking his thumb in the previous game before that to, you know, everybody. Adam did.
Adam went on a whole tour pretty much back in the offseason, and in his own way, Tez did.
Yeah.
He did an on. Josina Anderson thing on ESPN in the middle of the offseason.
Jeremy Hill did the Bristol thing.
Jeremy Hill has owned it. Yeah, since he's been living
post-game.
Yeah. So that's a guy that would love to have a big day, I'm sure. I'm curious to see what it's going to look like out there. How similar will it look to Game 2 at Paul Brown Stadium last year? How much bitterness has been stewing inside. I mean, how will they flash back? Will it be like a PTSD?
Right.
You know, when you see these guys again?
And, right.
I mean, it's just...
Or do they go back to the regular season where they, you know, they basically, it's a boxing match
at
Heinz Field that they win.
Yeah.
You know, because in the end, Andy and AJ make a play. Sean Williams makes a play. And then, honest to God, I mean, it was a, you know, shootout after Andy Dalton got hurt, but I don't think there's a single person in the building in at Paul Brown Stadium that feels they wouldn't have won that game if Andy doesn't break his thumb. You know what I mean? So I'm curious if they, you're right, if there is that, or if they just feel we're better.
I don't know that they'll know till they get out there, to be honest with you. And here's the good thing about the result and winning. Imagine if they were going into this thing 0-1, and we, you know, we talked about this because we both picked them to start 0-2 in our season preview. The pressure would mount. You don't want to start 0-2, and you're just, you know, it's just a bad. Now, because you already got the one win, you got the one win amongst those two real tough games on the road to start. I mean, this game is going to mean a ton in the big picture. This series is going to go a long way to deciding the North. But it feels like a little bit more of a win-win road trip, where even if you lose, you can sort of push it aside. Well, they'll come to your place later, and you're 1-1. You're fine.
Right.
The Jets win, I just think, is huge in that way, in the attitude you can have to go in there and just cut it loose.
Yeah. No, I think so, because, you know, in the immediacy of Sunday – all the Jets beat guys were talking to all those Jets players about 0-2, the math of 0-2. If you don't win week two, mathematically you're screwed. Yeah. So you're right, Paul. I do think that is a huge burden, and even the fact that they didn't play their A game on either side of the ball and still managed to win. And Pittsburgh, look, if people read our preview section, I think Pittsburgh's a real good team. They're going to make the playoffs, but they do have some issues, you know, in that secondary especially, you know. So there's things, they don't have a Le'Veon Bell. There's some things they're going to have to work through here early in the season. So maybe, I don't know, Paul, at first thought, you know, when I saw this, I was like, oh, maybe Pittsburgh's got a clear edge because, you know, their continuity or whatever might be. I don't know.
I don't know either. We'll get more into that game on Thursday's BBP. And we'll have a little special content for you then. which we're really excited about. So make sure you check out that. And thanks to everybody that listened and checked out our first BBP 2.
Yeah.
Last week, it looked like a lot of you guys gave it a listen and seemed. Hopefully you liked it. If there's anything else, any other added elements, we threw a bunch of stuff in there. Yeah. It ended up being pretty meaty in the end. I think meatier than we didn't realize when you finally start throwing it all together between the hot seat with Dalton and the throwback Thursday with Terrell Owens and the PFF stuff. And then obviously our wisdom.
Yeah.
But, you know,
it's like a fall stew. You know, it's like giving the people just like, you know what, even though it was 85 degrees and hot.
Yeah.
It was like, here's his beef and carrots.
And 20 minutes celery. Of Terrell Owens on top. great stuff. So we'll have more. So keep an eye out, and you'll see who our Throwback Thursday interview is this Thursday. I think you'll like it. And then I've got I'm excited about our Throwback Thursday for Denver week. I'm excited about it. So excited I might just yell for no reason. Just trying, just throwing, dropping hints over here, dropping hints. So anyway, thanks everybody for listening to that. I want to go into one more thing before we start wrapping this thing up and get out of here. Mike Nugent,
yeah,
hits the 47-yard game winner, and so I did this new thing, this new emoji thing,
yeah.
In the walkthrough, we're going to do it every Monday. I'm going to send out my emojis to different Bengals players or maybe to opposing team or whoever. Really leaves a lot of options.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many emojis. Yeah. So many emoji combos that you can make stuff up on your own. I mean, there's just a lot of good stuff. Those of you who've been listening to the BBP know we love the term Ledecky'd.
Yep.
That one's going to be coming to you at some point. The swimmer emoji, someone's going to get Ledecky, and that thing's going to hit print. That thing is going to get published on our website for sure. So we're going to – I can't wait for that to happen. But there's just so many options. But anyway, so I kind of send out to all you, and definitely do this next Monday or Sunday night. Send me your emojis and what you think I should be doing with the emoji, and I'll give you a shout-out if I use it. But some dude sent me a great one. I can't scroll fast enough to find it on my Twitter, but he basically said, "I don't even know what that emoji is."
I didn't know what it was.
Oh, it's from the Who Day Sire, is his name. It looks like what he thinks it is. He says it equals puckered butthole waiting on Nuge to kick the game winner. Thank you, sir, for making me laugh so hard. That's just amazing. But there was this sense. Let's break down the enormity of that kick for Mike Nugent. Let's play out the other side. He misses the 47-yarder that would have won the game. They take the L. Coming off a preseason where he had a very rough go of it.
Yeah.
They would be considering picking up the phone at that point.
Yeah, especially because the preseason and then the missed 52-yarder in that game. So it would have been two missed field goals.
Two missed field goals in the fourth quarter, including a game-winner attempt and a bad preseason.
And you know that one of the most accurate kickers in NFL history experienced in kicking on crappy grass and crappy wind in Chicago would be available on Monday without a guaranteed contract.
Right.
Because it's after week one.
And that's an enormous kick for week. That's an enormous amount of pressure.
And think about it, he made it. How many field goals were missed at the end of games of week one?
Right. PATs.
Yeah.
Coming into play everywhere. So many. I mean, Denver. They win on a missed field goal. And then we see on Sunday night the same thing, a missed field goal from Arizona. Similar lengths. And Nugent buries it. We've run a lot of numbers on Mike Nugent out there. One that we have not enough brought out is his accuracy in fourth quarter and overtimes. I had to go back and look. Since he joined the Bengals in 2011, he has hit on 91% of his fourth quarter and overtime field goals. Now, that's saying something. Only six kickers that have at least, you know, 30 minimum attempts. Right. Only six kickers have a higher are above 90. Yep. Okay, so he's about 82 otherwise.
Yeah.
So you take that's it. So take away the 90%. So that, I mean, he's below 80 the rest of the time. But when it comes crunch time, and I'm not gonna go using like you know clutch gene.
Right? Oh come on!
I'm not using clutch gene.
You know there's an analytic for this. Analytics guy, sabermetric guy.
This
come
is
on.
As close as I'm getting. I gave you the fourth quarter to overtime stat. I'm not using clutch gene, but I'm saying, at a certain point, there is something to being incredible, so much better.
Yeah.
At the
it's a large sample size. That's the key point there.
That's is 5 years. Yeah. That's the entire time he's been here. He's incredibly good. He's so much better in the fourth quarter and overtime. That means something. Yeah. Those are the kicks that mean something, and they all, in their own way, mean something.
Right.
But those really mean something. That's when the pressure's at its highest, and don't you want a kicker that's good when the pressure's at its highest? The only kick I can think of, the big, big kick that he missed was the Carolina at the end of overtime that ended up in the tie. Denver last year, yeah. He had one, but it wasn't at the end.
Right.
Like, you know, he's got a lot of game-winning kicks under his belt for this team, and that means something when you go out there and try to kick a game-winning kick like yeah. He had to on Sunday. No, nothing to add.
No, you said it all perfectly. Let's hear from Nuge.
As yes.
Very nice straight shot. Okay. Yeah, it was good and high, and it wasn't an absolute bomb.
You pretty much knew.
No. Right when I saw it going straight, I kind of looked away, and it was one of those ones where I was happy the way it came off. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Talk about the scramble at the end of the first half, twofold. You guys practiced that a lot. What mm-hmm. I think you've even asked this before. What's the optimal time, and what's the minimum time from sideline to getting that off? Was it are you right on it almost?
It's you know, to be honest with you, it's kind of up in the air. It's one of those things like if it's it just depends on how you know how the ball kind of falls, and you know the good thing is all that's really happening is the linemen are basically staying out there, and there's only a few of us running out on the field. So I think there was enough time. There was a little confusion because I think one of our guys ran into the head referee. And
he did.
And he fell down.
Okay, he was right in front of you. Yeah. So did you not even notice that?
You know what? I did because he was almost in the path.
Yeah.
He
okay,
was in
okay.
my path, but all his paperwork fell out, so his paperwork was right in my path, but. All I thought to myself was like, all right, well, that's not going to affect anything. Just, you know, Kevin will put it down and just make sure you get a good hit on it. And I'm just really appreciative of all the guys, you know, getting out there and executing that so smoothly.
I know you told Jeff, but I didn't hear the part of it. The one, the 52-yarder, did you hit it good? Did you not hit it the way you
Yeah, I hit it well. And when I hit a ball well that doesn't go where I want it to, it's more of an alignment thing. So I'm going to have to watch that on film because I was a little surprised where it went to how it felt off my foot. And I think it's one of those things. I'm really happy with how I approached the next kick. Right. I didn't think, okay, I pushed that one. Maybe I gotta pull left on it a little bit. Just at that point, it's just like, all right, my steps. Maybe I was a little too close to the ball and pushed it right. So just do everything correctly and don't play the slice, you know, per se. So.
All right. Well, thanks to Mike Nugent for elaborating when my boy Jim wouldn't hang me out to dry. Like the safety on Darrelle Revis, just leave me hanging out
you
there.
You said it so well.
I did say it so well. I said it. I actually said it terribly, which is why I could have used a little pick me up at some point. I think I stumbled over my words three times. So let's go. It's time. It's time for two of our favorite segments here. One, what's making Jim mad? Hey, what's making you mad?
All right, I'm going to throw a curveball. I'm not going to go transit. I could have. I had a legit gripe.
Well, you were driving around. Weren't you driving around Manhattan? Like everyone.
No, that was cool. I was able to handle that, believe it or not.
Yeah.
My pilot didn't show up for the plane this morning.
Like, pilot with a no-show.
Yeah. Like we're all standing there. They do the first two boarding, and then they say, that's literally how it happened. The pilot has not arrived.
The pilot.
We need We need to, but that, you know, I think I was just so tired. That didn't even make me mad. You know what made me mad? And I don't think you have to deal with this because you're taller than me. So you can verify, or is it, as Brant likes to say, confirm or disconfirm.
Yes.
This. So the thing that makes me mad is, I don't even know what this is called. It's the bottom end of a bed frame, like where the feet of the foot of the bed is.
Yeah.
Why? I have surgically repaired knees, if none of y'all know this. It is like kneecap level on like every bed. And that is and you could say it's my fault for like hitting it all the time and like damaging my knees. So that makes me mad that they're always just that height.
Yeah, why do they have to be there?
Yeah.
You know what I don't like?
But see, you're taller than me though, so do you hit your knees on that bed?
I don't like the footboard.
Okay, that's it. See, footboards, I couldn't even think about it.
Why does the footboard got to go up? Like, I'm tall, and sometimes I just kind of like my feet to hang over the edge because it kind of feels nice.
So it should be lower. See, I was thinking it should be higher so I couldn't hit my knees. It should be lower.
It needs to just not block your feet. Don't contain me when I'm trying to sleep. I need to be free. You know?
Yeah, I'm always.
No, you should definitely not have anything at kneecap level. That's the only thing that can really hurt you.
I'm average height.
Isn't great.
Well, I'd take a shin than a knee.
For you. what about shin guy?
Screw shin guy. That's what shins are made for.
Shin guy taking heat. Shin guy taking heat.
That's what makes me mad.
That's what makes you mad. Oh, I appreciate it. All right, well, now it's time for the Swedish shout-out.
Yeah.
It's time for the Swedish shout out. Thank you again to all the Swedes that are checking. All those Swedes, get it together.
Yeah, you gave them some love and then they went away.
United Kingdom trumped you. Canada. Yeah. Canada had a lot of listeners in Canada this past week. And I want to say it. Denmark. Denmark made a play. And Sweden, you're falling behind. So we expect to hear from you. We expect you to stay on board now. Otherwise, I'm going to point out the news story that was number one news story on the first Swedish website I could find. And that was that it was the number one story about how ABBA is the best pop band of all time.
Yeah.
That's not helping your reputation,
no.
Sweden. You got to be better than that. So... this isn't really a Swedish shout out. This is a Swedish beatdown right now. I expect better. You know, I've come to love you as a country for your love of us, but we got to talk about. Listen, I like ABBA as much as the next guy, and the next guy doesn't like him that much.
Yeah.
But I have a few songs. Certainly, I've danced to when you have to, but we've got to be better than this. On that note, we've really done well here at the end of this podcast.
Yeah, we have.
We really.
Hey, you know, I am curious. But see, here's the thing, and I'll say this to tack on to the Swedish minute. We are going to Europe, so I think it is appropriate to call out other nations. and I think
we're the opposite of the UN.
So we will. And then we will all get together and drink heavy beer in London at the end of October.
Reconcile our differences.
Yeah.
Or have an airing of the grievances.
Yeah.
I'll bring the pole out of the crawl space, bring it on the plane.
I don't know if they'll let you do that.
Can I check
TSA
that?
My night? Can I check?
I'd like to check
might
this
be
pole.
Able to.
Oh, goodness. All right. We've clearly... been up way too long today. This is a long day. Early
you're
flights.
Gonna know these BBPs, man. You know it when we had a road game and
we're recording them late on Monday night. Jim, your alarm went off at 3:30 in the morning. It's just too damn late. We gotta get out of here. All right, so what are we gonna go out on though?
Yeah, I couldn't think of like a positive song because they won the game because I immediately flip forward, and I understand we got BBP2, but we don't really do music on BBP2, so I'll let you make the decision. The first thing that came to me was the Imperial March, the Vader theme.
Yes.
I mean, you know what? It was the first thing that came.
You're right, because as this thing ends, everyone now looks forward,
yep.
And that's all it is. You're exactly right about that. All right, well, here we go. Pittsburgh week is officially here. And for Jim Osarski, I'm Paul Daner Jr., and we'll talk to you on Thursday.